Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Joining us right now, former longtime major leaguer, many years with the Cubs, spent 6 years with the Mets, and that, of course, is Steve Traxel. Steve, Joe, and Evan here in New York. Thanks for coming on. How are you?
Hi, hey, Steve. Guys. How are you?
Doing good. Thanks for having me, guys.
I got to hand it to you, Steve, because as a baseball fan in 1998, and as a Met fan, I'm watching Cub games because I want the Cubs to lose. No offense to you. I want them to lose. We're in a pennant race. And when I would see players, you know, Patton Mark McGuire, you know, give him a high five after he had a home run, even though I was rooting for the Cardinals against the Cubs, that would tick me off, saying, wait a second, there's a pennant race going on right now. And I appreciate the fact that on this documentary that we were watching, that you were honest about, yeah, I didn't love the fact that Mark McGuire hits a home run off of me, and basically all my teammates are shaking his hands.
Yeah, no, it's something that you normally see at the Little League World Series, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, no, definitely. I mean, obviously for the, you know, all the fans that were at the stadium, they didn't, you know, all they cared about was seeing Mark's home run. And for the extra 50, 60 reporters we had every day, that's all they cared about as well. But, yeah, Cubs hadn't been in a playoff for a long time. Cardinals had. So it was pretty important for us.
Steve, how was that whole feel in 98? I mean, obviously you wound up giving up that home run, was it 62, to McGuire? But yep. You also were a teammate of Sammy Sosa. So, I mean, so you're on the team with Sammy Sosa, you know, the rivalry with the Cardinals, McGuire is doing his thing. How was that? How was that for you? Because you were right there with Sammy Sosa, so you were right in the middle of this home run chase. How about that?
Oh, it was amazing. I mean, that entire year for the Cubs was amazing. I mean, we had Harry Carey passing away before the season started. You had Kerry Wood punching out 20 in his fifth big league start.
Right.
And then June comes, and then Sammy just goes absolutely nuts. So, you know, maybe the second week of June, I mean, just everything in our clubhouse, from the media to the, you know, to the questions, just completely quadrupled. You know, you leave the ballpark and see what Mark did that night, and whatever he did, that was the first thing you were going to have to talk about walking into the, you know, the field the next morning. Remember, we had day games at Wrigley, so we're at the ballpark at 8:30 in the morning. So sometimes we wouldn't see what Mark did till, you know, 11:30 at night. And, yeah, just went back and forth like that every single day for the final 2 months. And, yeah, we had that heartbreaker in Milwaukee, which I'm sure you guys love.
Oh, Brant Brown.
The Brant Brown ball.
Yeah. Oh, you're right.
Yeah, and then we had the one-game playoff. So, I mean, it was just a roller coaster magical season for the entire year.
Did you ever say anything to your teammates about being ticked off about the high fives to Mark McGuire, or was it just something you kind of lived with?
Oh, no, they knew. I mean, we actually discussed it. That was part of, I guess, maybe some of my frustration, is we had talked about it, you know, prior to the series, and Scott Servais and I talked about in our pregame warm, you know, pitching meeting, you know, that we, you know, besides the fact that we didn't want to be the guys giving it up, much less the team, but yeah, we didn't want to celebrate it either, you know, as he was going around the field. You could see in Mark's face when he rounds first that he was pretty reluctant, you know, putting his hand out. And, you know, Gary Gaetti, too, is like, you know what, by the time he got here, I think the emotions kind of took over of how big a moment it was. And so by the time he got to home plate, you know, you see my catcher give him a hug. It's just kind of like, all right, what the hell's going on here?
So you didn't have an urge to walk to home plate and just give a big bear hug to Mark McGwire?
You know what? I heard the other day that Gary Gaetti told me or said that I did that or said that. I don't remember saying it, but it does sound like something I would have said. That basically, like, you know, should I freaking go up there now and give him a hug, you know, type of a thing. But, I was pretty obviously upset at the moment, and then also trying to stay focused because, you know, when everything ended, I still had to get the next guy out. I think it was Ray Lankford at that point.
And I remember at that moment, you know, early September, you guys had tied with the Mets. I mean, that's the thing. The Cardinals were never in a pennant race. They were 8-9 games out. You guys are like right there with the Mets every single day. And it was almost forgotten about, or at least the perception it was forgotten about, because it's all about the home runs.
Yeah, that's kind of how we felt at times, you know, depending on where we were playing. It was like, did you guys win today? It's like, oh, no, they don't really care if we did that. It's like, did Sammy hit a home run today? No? Oh, okay, well, then we've got nothing to talk about. He's like, well, Mark hit two. Let's talk about that. It's like, wait a minute. No, we won yesterday. We've got a one-game lead in the playoffs right now. Oh, no, we don't care about that. So it's like it just wasn't making the news. It was like, you know, third or fourth page instead of the main page headline.
You know, my partner on his Saturday show, Steve, had Turk Wendell on. And Turk, he asked him what kind of teammate Sammy Sosa was, and he didn't have very good things to say about that. So I'm going to ask you, what kind of a teammate was Sammy Sosa?
It's amazing how many people were texting me Saturday evening.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, of course, yeah. You know, I texted Turk, and I was like, dude, what did you do?
Interesting.
You know, I didn't spend any time with Sammy off the field. He was not the easiest guy to get along with. I think for the most part, I do kind of have to agree with everything Turk said.
Wow.
Whether or not he was the worst teammate, that's a whole nother level. But there was definitely a lot of times in the 6 years I was there that Sammy was more worried about what he did than how the team came about, and that's unfortunate. But there's guys like that on every team I've played with, so it's just something that you deal with. And you know, that's why you have 23 other guys on the team to kind of, you know, help everybody gel and become together and win games. So, but there's no denying we wouldn't have gotten where we got without Sammy doing what he did that year. So, you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword.
Yeah, I mean, he was the MVP that year, obviously. Absolutely. Had an incredible season.
I remember before that even came out, I asked him, you know, I had him sign a bat for me. And I go, hey, put on their 1998, National League MVP. And he kind of gave me this look, and I'm like, no, just write it on there. He's like, there's no way you're not going to win it. So he actually signed it for me that way before he got the award. So,
wow.
We had no chance without what he did. Especially, I mean, June, that just completely catapulted us into a whole other level.
Steve, I didn't mean to jump on you.
Yeah, no,
Steve,
go ahead, Joe.
Looking back on that whole 98 now and what's happened with the steroid stuff with McGwire and Sammy, did you have any idea that any of this kind of thing was going on?
Nothing officially, no. I think we all had suspicions that, you know, things were going on. We were hearing rumors about stuff the prior years. But I think a lot of the focus was more on, you know, like the second baseman that hit two or three home runs a year, and then now he's hitting 24.
Right.
The guys that were hitting a bunch, I think it was probably, you know, they're just working out better, they're getting better, whatever. The balls were juiced, the fences are being brought in, you know, the strike zone is getting smaller. There's definitely rumors about, you know, and questions of guys, but nothing, never witnessed anything, never talked about it with anybody. I don't even remember getting asked about it by reporters even. So I think it was just kind of, you know what, fans are coming back, we're just not going to talk about it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we were all, in a way, fans, media members.
Sure.
We were kind of going along with it because no one ever really brought up that much about steroids and whatnot as it was happening.
Shoot, the Cubs were winning, so that's all I cared about. I'm like, oh, yeah. Whatever. I don't care what we're doing. We're winning. I'm happy here.
did you think, you know, I'm looking back at that home run you gave up to McGwire, and you're saying, hey, I don't want to give it up. Was there ever a thought, and I know this is tough to do because you are in a pennant race, every game matters, of basically saying, I'm not going to give him a pitch to hit. Like, I don't want to give up the home run. I'd rather just put him on. Was
like
that a thought as you're facing?
Intentional?
Yes, the unintentional intentional, yes.
Yeah, no, that was never really a thought unless it was, you know, came up in a situation where, you know, runner's on base and he's the game tying and first base is open. You know, the typical how you would do it with, you know, with pretty much any other 2, 3, 4, 5 hole hitter. No, I mean, he still had holes. He still had, you know, spot down and in, which is where I was trying to go there, that the ball wouldn't have been State Fair, or he'd grounded out, or he would still chase sliders in the dirt or split in the dirt. So, yeah, no, I mean, that exact sequence was supposed to be fastball in the inner corner. Hopefully he takes it for a strike. If not, he pulls it foul because it's in. And then I already knew we were following it right back up with a split down and in if we were 0-1. Unfortunately, right. The ball, you know, leaked over a little bit inner third, and he hit it so hard it didn't have a chance to go foul.
Talking to Steve Traxel. Steve, you were a Met for 6 years, and you kind of bridged the gap, you know. You bridged, like, the end, kind of the end of the Piazza era, and you know, went all the way through 06 and, you know, into the that 97 win team, and, of course, the brutal loss in the playoffs to the Cardinals. How about that? How about that, your six-year tenure as a New York Met?
Oh, I loved it. I had a great time. I wanted to be in New York. I wanted to be, you know, to see if I could handle that pressure. And, you know, you could see my first few weeks, it didn't go real well. You know, it was a completely different animal than I was expecting. And I struggled those first few weeks. And I went back down to, the AAA for a bit,
right,
to kind of
right.
clear my head. It was a huge, huge adjustment being in New York. You know, I was a California guy. I had the same offer to play for the Angels, you know, and I was like, nope, I want to go to New York. You know, I know we're going to have a chance to win every year. I want to see if I can handle that pressure and just kind of see what it was like. And, you know, luckily I was able to turn around. Otherwise, it would have been a pretty short stint.
Well, let me get to that minor league thing, because I think any time a guy struggles and they can't be sent down, we always say, but you remember, Steve Traxel agreed to go to the minor leagues.
Right,
and it turned
right.
around your run with the Mets.
Right.
How did that happen? Did Bobby Valentine approach you? How did that occur, the idea of you taking a step back and going into the minor leagues?
Yeah, it was kind of a group. Bobby Valentine, Charlie Huff, Steve Phillips. You know, of course, remember Bobby Jones had done it prior too, if I remember correctly. And it was just kind of like we were sitting down, okay, because it's like, what is it that we need to, you know, what is wrong? I knew I wasn't pitching up to my potential. I knew it wasn't something that was, you know, physical. So it was basically mental, you know, going from, you know, remember I was in Tampa and Toronto the year before, so I'm looking 2-3 reporters maybe a day to now I'm doing 20-25, especially when I was struggling, that increased. It was just basically a way to get out and clear my head, go down and work on some basic pitching mechanic type stuff, you know, fine tune some, you know, setting up hitters type of a thing, and then come back. Part of it was big. I remember talking with Jay Horowitz about it, like, you know, we're getting away from the media. You know, you're going to go down there and be, you know, not have to do interviews every day. And of course, you know, I end up throwing that 7-inning no hitter, and then there's a phone waiting for me before I even get into the dugout from Jay saying, hey, we've got all the media here wanting to talk to you in New York. And I'm like, Jay, I thought we weren't going to do this. He's like, it's too late. We put it on the big board, Jay. It's already too late. So, I mean, if guys are willing to do it, which is probably less likely nowadays, it's probably individual. But for me, I think it was just definitely something I needed to do.
You know, you had this reputation of not being the fastest worker on the mound, you know, taking a lot of time between pitches. How about that? How about that, Steve?
That wasn't something I was consciously doing. When I'd watch tapes later, I would see it. You know, it was actually pretty shocking to me the first couple of times that I was that slow. I definitely earned the human rain delay moniker, which is, you know, I'm fine. I'll take it. I've actually got a beer coming out here in California called the human rain delay.
Is that right?
Yeah, about 3.5 weeks. We actually bottled it yesterday. So,
wow.
It was something I consciously tried to get better at. I remember Charlie Huff times, even in spring training. You know, we would have him in there with a stopwatch while he's pitching, going in between, and we'd sit down in between innings, and, you know, it's like, you know, did you see anything I was doing that was, you know, this, or this that could either speed me up or not make me as slow? But kind of ironic now that the more speed-up rules they put in, the longer the games are now. So
I know. We've been talking for a while that's something baseball needs to do. It feels like a lot of pitchers, especially relief pitchers, take so much time between pitches. But you're saying when it happened, when you would pitch, you never noticed it? You never felt, hey, I'm taking a lot of time between pitches? It was something that needed to be pointed out to you?
It felt like I was, you know, a million miles a second in my head. I mean, it you know, just the focus and the things I was, you know, visualizing in my head, it felt like I was working extremely well. I guess I'd call it normal, you know, compared to what I was doing, it would be fast. But when I would actually go back and get a chance to watch it on tapes and stuff like that, that's when it was really kind of opened my eyes. That was when we really made a conscious effort to do a lot better.
I know you haven't pitched in the majors in a decade, but if you were pitching and they created the pitch clock, they brought it into the major leagues and said, all right, here's the clock, 20 seconds, go. Do you think it would have negatively affected you? How do you think you would have dealt with it?
Well, it wasn't an issue till guys got on base.
Right.
With nobody on base, I was fine. So I don't know how the clock would work, but with guys on base. But I just think if that was something that they had done or was enforced, you make adjustments. You know, that's how the game is. You're constantly making adjustments throughout the game, throughout your career, coming up with new stuff. And if that was something that was implemented, it might have taken me a little while. But at some point, yeah, I definitely would have adjusted to it. And who knows if it would have made me better or not? That's a whole other debate you could have. Might have made me worse. Might have made me better. Who knows?
Right.
But I would have adjusted to it, I think, over eventually.
Talking to Steve Traxel, of course, the former Met, the former Cub, long major league career in pitching in the majors. I was mentioning this game earlier to Evan. I'll never forget this game. I just want to get your thoughts on it. I think it was in 2006 season. You're pitching for the Mets, and you're pitching against the Phillies in Citizens Bank. And I believe it was Xavier Nady who hits this bomb to center field. And Evan reminded me it was Aaron Rowan.
Rowan
made this crazy catch. I think it would have been a grand slam if I'm not mistaken, right? A five inning game, it was rained out after five, or stopped after five. You remember that game, Steve?
I absolutely remember that game. It was, Rowan, he crashed. I think he broke his nose or broke his chin.
Yes, like his
like
face
that.
Against the wall. Right.
Yeah, I remember sitting through that rain delay, trying to stay warm, and then when they finally called it, I think someone looked at me and was like, oh, at least you get credit for a complete game. Nobody does that anymore. And I'm like, oh, great, a five-inning complete game loss. Thanks.
You know, it's funny, when we brought the game up earlier, that's the first thing I mentioned to Joe. I said, well, Steve Traxel got a four-inning complete game out of it. It's actually only a four-inning complete game.
Yeah, it wasn't even five. There you go. It was four. I didn't even qualify for the win if you didn't make the catch.
That's right.
Right.
What type
the wins
of
wins don't matter anymore, right? Isn't that the new?
That's
new
right. Wins don't exactly.
Oh my gosh!
Exactly. What type of teammate was Beltran, and do you think he would have been a good manager? We may never find out based on what happened. But what'd you think of Carlos?
No, Carlos was great. I do think he would have been a good manager. He's obviously gotten a lot of experience after playing with being front office and all that. Curious how he would have handled the media, because he didn't enjoy talking to the media as much as some other guys, but I'm sure that's something he got over being in front office and all that. I have no doubt that he would have been a very solid manager, highly knowledgeable about all aspects of the game. He would be a tremendous hitting coach. Obviously a tremendous outfield coach. I think he could do just about anything on the field and do great at it.
Steve, 2006. 2006, you guys were the best team in the National League. You won 97 games. It didn't end the way certainly us as Met fans wanted to see it end, the way you guys wanted it to end. How about that year? How about 06? And talk about that team a little bit.
Oh, 06 was great. It was heartbreaking. Pretty much any year you don't make it to postseason or the World Series, over the years it becomes heartbreaking, but I would have to say that was probably the most talented team, top to bottom, and that had been a part of. And there's so many thoughts that you can go back and what ifs, and if this had happened and this hadn't happened, things may have been different. But it's kind of hard to live your life that way after the fact, without making the adjustments at the time. But I've had the opportunity to play with Hall of Famers, both in the, on pitchers and defense, catchers. It's a heartbreaking way to finish, but, there's a lot of things that happened in the game that, could have possibly not ever, gotten to that point. So it's been nice to have a little bit of a do-over the past maybe 3-4 weeks. Who knows what would have happened.
Mm. No kidding. I'm thinking about it now. If Sosa isn't the worst teammate you ever had, would it be? Here are some guys that come into my head.
You going to give them guys?
I'm going to give you some choices. Yeah, oh, Robbie Alomar, because I figure, he was probably cranky. Guys at the end of his career, he was terrible with the Mets. Grant Roberts, thinking of him, relief pitcher, and Armando Benitez. Are any of those three guys terrible teammates, or were they all good?
No, not at all.
Okay.
I'm actually looking going, really? Those are three guys you picked?
No, I just thought of three random guys, Steve, to be honest with you. I have no idea what kind of teammate Grant Roberts is.
I can't believe you came. Grant Roberts.
I tried to think of the most obscure
Goose
guy.
Great. Goose was laid back. He was a Cal guy. We were California guys. We got along great.
Is that his nickname, Goose?
Goose.
Grant
yeah,
Roberts?
Grant was Goose.
So you never knew that.
Yeah. Learn something every day.
We're talking to Steve Traxel. Let me ask you something about your Cubby days, because we were talking about this. In 98, when you guys get to the one-game playoff, you're the starter in that one-game playoff at Wrigley Field against the Giants. What was that atmosphere like, and did it feel like, even though it counts as a regular season game, I get it, did it finally feel as if the attention was on making the playoffs and not Sammy Sosa, at least for that one night?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I think at that point, I hadn't had that experience of electricity in a stadium to that level. Definitely had it in New York a few times, but that was my first experience of just the pure excitement and expectations from the fans, and where every single pitch, you know, all 46,000 fans were on the edge of their seats waiting to see what happened. I remember so many things about that, just like the giant Harry Carey balloon floating in left field, and that was just awesome. You know, Gary Gaetti hitting that homer, Rod Beck coming in, getting the pop up to first base to end it, me striking out Barry Bonds in the first inning, just so much. And one of the best compliments I think I'd gotten in my career up to that point was Terry Mulholland after the game. Kind of pulled me aside, and it's like, you know what, from this point on, they'll never be able to say that you're not a big game pitcher. Mm. That's probably one of the best compliments I had gotten up to that point.
Yeah, that's got to feel pretty good, no doubt about it. You pitched for the Cubs in Chicago, you pitched for the Mets in New York, two very passionate fan bases. How would you compare the two?
Ooh. I think New York's definitely rougher.
Okay.
They're definitely rougher when you're struggling. Chicago was luckily had a little bit more to do with Wrigleyville and Budweiser and Harry Carey and drinking a bunch of beers by 3:30.
Right.
Maybe that's why I work so slow, so guys can drink more beers by the seventh inning in my games, and they'd be a little bit more drunk if I didn't do well, and it wouldn't matter as much to them.
But so the Met fans, so basically what you're saying is the Met fans took it a lot more seriously than the Cub fans did.
Absolutely. I mean, both very knowledgeable. Nothing against Shea Stadium, but Wrigley Field's definitely a tourist destination also.
Right, yeah. Right. Oh, no question. No question about that. Right.
It's an event.
I do remember warming up for ball games at Chicago a couple times where there would be a family of four, because remember the bullpens were, 8 feet from the stands. And there'd be a family of four there in their brand new Cubs jerseys with no numbers on them and looking at the list, like going, yeah, we're supposed to be looking for number 17 and number 23. He's, Sundberg. Oh, and this 21 guy that runs the right field. These are the guys we're supposed to look for. And they knew nothing about the team. But they were at Wrigley because that's where you were supposed to go when you got to Chicago.
That's like going to a Knick game at Madison Square
right,
Garden.
Right, it's like the place to be. Right? Right. Exactly right. The trendy right. place to go, right,
There's
Steve?
More seats available at the Knick game, though, isn't there?
Oh, no. No, it's they sell out every game, man.
Oh, yeah.
No matter how bad they are.
No matter how bad they are, it's unbelievable, Steve.
Oh,
you can't make it.
Good. That's a good thing. All right.
Well, yes
Did
or no.
You, well, it's not a good thing.
Right.
They don't win.
Oh. Right.
Did you like, you mentioned all the day games. Did you like that aspect of it? That basically, not every single game, but certainly more than there are now, but most of your home games are played in the middle of the afternoon. Did you like that aspect of being on the Cubs?
It took some adjusting. The hard part is you go on the road, say you go on a 10-game trip, you're playing at least 8 night games. You might get home at, 2 o'clock in the morning or midnight, and then you have the 9 a.m., call at the field for a 1 o'clock game the next day. That's the hardest part. I think it was easier as a visiting player to come in and play those day games because you only had to deal with it for 2 or 3 days.
Right. Makes sense.
I think over the course of the season, it would wear you down a little bit.
There was always a feeling that one of the reasons the Cubs never won was because they played all those day games. There was always that kind of really worked against the Cubs.
I could definitely see that too. I know a lot of the guys that were, married and had kids, they liked it because they would get to go home and have dinner with their kids and family.
Right.
But you have the single guys, the young guys that, want to go out and enjoy Chicago, by July, August, it catches up to you.
Sure. Do you think, Steve, we're going to have a baseball season? We're talking to Steve Traxel, by the way. Are you confident we're going to have a baseball season? What do you think?
I do. I really think something's going to happen. You know, I was a player rep for, you know, Cubs and the Mets and Tampa Bay, so I've dealt with a lot of these situations a little bit. And the one thing I always took away from it was a lot of the stuff that you're hearing or reading in the paper, there's always something going on behind the scenes that's not being talked about. And I think, I really believe that's something that's going on now. The only hiccup I would see is that the bargain agreement is up after it was the next year or shortly after.
Right.
After being done. So I think anything that the players give up or the owners can gain is going to be used in the next agreement, bargain agreement. You know, my ideal situation is like, why not extend the whole bargaining agreement now? Do an extension now and let's go play. But I think we'll be, call it 50 games somewhere in there, give or take. Something will happen.
Interesting.
Too much to lose.
I hope you're right, man. Yeah. I hope you're right. I'm losing faith every day.
Let's hope so, Steve.
Yeah.
Let's hope so.
Hopefully you guys are able to get in shape. I mean, who knows? They may have to come up with some kind of rules. Maybe, like I've seen the DH stuff thrown out there.
Yeah.
A couple extra pitchers. Who knows? But I have faith.
I hope you're right. Steve, we really appreciate it.
Appreciate
it,
Steve.
Thank
Good
you,
stuff.
Gentlemen.
I really, really thanks a lot for coming on.
Anytime. Appreciate it.
Steve Traxel, the former Cub, the former Med, and agrees with Turk Wendell that Sammy Sosa.
Maybe that's
exactly
one of the reasons why, we're asking about Sammy Sosa, why the Cubs never invite him back. They don't do that. Maybe this guy was just a bad guy. You don't hear good. These are two guys now, Turk Wendell and Steve Traxel. So he's not exactly the greatest teammate.
Yeah.
He was more worried about himself than the team.
No, and I obviously believe that. I don't think there's any reason at this point for Turk Wendell and Steve Traxel, of all people, to make it up. So I do believe that, but it shouldn't matter because bringing a guy back is for the fans. That's what it's about.
Yeah,
bringing
sure.
Sammy Sosa back.
No, they
back
should.
To
I'm not
Field.
Saying they shouldn't, but
right.
It is interesting that
no doubt.
Maybe he wasn't. Obviously this guy wasn't. He was a me guy.
Yeah, and I could imagine in 1998. Because I know what it was like as a fan in a pennant race, but Steve Traxel and anybody else on the Cubs, you're in a real pennant race, something you've never experienced. Here are the Cubs actually competing
right,
for a playoff
right.
spot, and you would think, well, that's the most important thing, not a home run chase that involves
yeah.
one player.
Right.
And so I could see how that would cause some resentment, too, that, for Sammy, who's looking at history, he's probably thinking, I just want to hit home runs. If I make the
right.
playoffs, great, but I want to hit home runs.
Right, right.
So I could see how that would be an issue, that's for sure.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.